Hello and welcome to The Unreleased, the design research podcast. This podcast exists to help map, broadcast and promote design research worldwide. The Unreleased podcast is brought to you by IAD, Universidad Europea and Unit.com. To know more, visit unrelease.unitcom-yad.pt. That's unrelease.unitcom-yad.pt. This is the second of two interviews with Italian design researchers that took place during a special visit to Politecnico di Milano in January 2019. During a couple of days, we could learn more about their research initiatives and forge stronger connections for projects and collaborations. In this episode, Professor Emilio Edouard talks with Valentina Rognoli, assistant professor at Politecnico di Milano, researcher and co-head of Materials Experience Lab in Italy. During this conversation, Valentina shares her thoughts on the future of materials, 3D printing, DIY and smart materials, and the valorization of imperfection.
The designer needs to assume the role and to be aware that if you choose a material, or if you are designing a material, is constantly putting on the passage of time, and through the time and through the use can be the image, or there are some change, is a kind of dynamic entity. The designer needs to be aware of this passage of time and the user of the people.
Here are Emilia and Valentina.
Dear Valentina, first of all, let me thank you on behalf of IAD, Universidad Europea, and Unit.com for your willingness to participate in our podcast. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here at Politecnico di Milano today with you. And so, since you are the head of the Laboratory on Materials Experience, I would like you to tell me, what's your definition for material?
Okay. So, I think that to answer to this question, I have to borrow the definition that Ezio Manzini gave in the 1986, because I find this definition still current and very precise and very consistent with what I'm thinking about materials. So Manzini said that matters become materials when they are involved and include in a design process. To get at the end a product, artifacts. I think that is very interesting, this definition, because today I think that we can look at the materials as something that is very changeable, and in some way almost everything can be used and can be explored as raw materials to start a design process.
Okay, so what means to conduct research on materials?
In this case, I can see that for me, conduct research on materials means to consider and to adopt a transdisciplinary point of view. I really love this research, this field of research, because it allows me to change a lot of time my shoes, my hat. And it's very challenging, and it is not boring at all, because you can transform yourself as an alchemist, as an anthropologist, as a, so you need to use a lot of lenses, and it's very interesting field of research. In addition, in my opinion, conduct materials research on materials means also to constantly train yourself to look at your material world, your material culture in a different way, trying to consider materials something that until yesterday was not considered materials. It means also to be able to take a responsibility of a more sustainable and circular world, because with materials and the production, as a designer, we decide how much we can impact in our future world. So we can stay here speaking
about that for a while.
Material reserve for 3 hours.
Okay. In particular, I'm interested in the relationship with the production or fabrication process, mm-hmm. because obviously materials and production processes are tightly connected. Mm-hmm. So in the past, the majority of these production processes were based on extracting or removing exceeding material. For example, what we call the subtractive synthesis, for example, cutting or carving were common processes in the past. But nowadays, mostly thanks to the 3D printing technology, the paradigm is changing. And products are now being created by adding material. So what's the impact of this change in the innovation on materials?
Mm-hmm. I think that in this domain, the real innovative things is for sure the time. So you can have in a very short time a prototype or a final product, we can say today, also the small amount of investment, a small amount of money you can invest to have this product. This is very important for designer and for the creative process. So you can have in a very short time idea about your project, and maybe you can translate your idea, I don't know how much kilometers far away, they can have your product on the desk. This is the great innovation on this. These things can also allow the designer to adopt an approach more focused on tinkering. So you can constantly experiment and think in the shape, of course, but also in material is important. So I think the innovation of this part, and of course the democratization of these mm-hmm. Technologies, this, and the idea that the designer can put the hands and can work in a contact with materials and see and assist directly to the transformation of the materials. So we can say the 3D printing and additive manufacturers are the new technology that are not so new, but in this moment we can see as a new contribution to materials design research, because they can we can consider as a craftsman mm-hmm. could work in the past directly in contact with the process, the mm-hmm. transformation process of the material. Mm-hmm. If you are inject some plastic in a very big machine, mm-hmm. you can have not the same experience as to see the filament that are construct your glass, let me say, for okay. example. So this is the idea. For me, the real innovation of this
area.
Okay. Area. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking on, for example, if we can't work anymore with these raw materials, that natural materials that are limited resources, we are losing this richness of this material. So we need to create new ones that can be 3D printed. Mm-hmm. Printed, but still have the similar properties, you know, mm-hmm. they have similar sensorial aspects. or can create new ones totally different than what exists.
Yeah.
So my question was, if you are considering developing new materials, mm-hmm. having this idea in mind or not, or if this is possibility just change the course of your research somehow.
In one of the important topics in this moment that we are investigating is the concept of DIY materials.
Mm-hmm.
Connected to the previous question, I can tell you about case studies that
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
presented in the last session of master thesis in Politecnico. And the project was focused on reuse the food waste from, I don't know the name in English.
You can say it in
the
Italian.
Le cozze, the mussels.
Mussels,
so
okay.
The black shell, sorry.
Okay, that's okay.
The black shell of mussels.
We
can have a lot of waste in the production. And also in some kind of restaurant and
mm-hmm.
things. So in particular, these students took this idea to reuse this waste. And she was good in founding an extrusor machine
mm-hmm.
in a fab lab in Torino to produce the filament composed by the PLA and the... shell of mussels pulverized. And the effect was fantastic because when you 3D printed this filament, you have the kind of refraction of light
mm-hmm.
like it was a shell, the original shell,
yeah.
I mean. And so this is, for me, is a very good example in terms of design a new material,
yeah.
that is was something also that surprised us, so we didn't know the final result during the process. No, it was something that we can explore together with the student, and it's fantastic because you can use a very low tech technology,
mm-hmm.
You can use waste, you can put everything together and have a new material experience.
And surprising
effect using this approach that we call DIY material, that means that the designer with a background and with a curiosity
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
capability to put the hands on the
on
material.
The
To transform this material.
Okay.
And in this case, we can also have the exploration, also the idea to use natural materials,
yes.
because also PLA and
okay.
the shell are natural one.
Okay.
Sì.
That's good, that's wonderful, that's very interesting. Usually, people tend to assume that the product's peak of quality coincides with the moment of its acquisition, and hereafter it can only decline in terms of quality.
Mm.
So to what extent do you think that materials could change this assumption, or these new materials could change this assumption? In other words, what do you think about having new materials gaining quality with use over time,
okay.
like for example the wood patine, you know, or gaining qualities according to the user preferences, you know, so
mm-hmm.
it can become like a customized almost result of the using the material.
Mm-hmm. So this is a very complex question because I can say you that we spent years with this research that we call imperfection,
okay.
and valorization of imperfection. And we started with the idea that the designer needs to assume the role and to be aware that if you choose a material, if you are designing a material, is constantly putting on the passage of time, and through the time and through the use can be the image, or there are some change,
mm-hmm.
is a kind of dynamic entity. And so the designer, what we were investigating is that the designer needs to be aware of this passage of time and the use of the user, mm-hmm. of the people. But also we focus also in the users. I mean, the designer needs to drive and to accompany the user in changing their own perception. Because the key in this field is the acceptance. So the designers need to design something that can be acceptable for the user, and the user needs to collaborate. To collaborate in terms that not very suddenly, but we need to prepare a kind of transition of our aesthetical perception. Because in this moment, maybe not for us as a researcher, but for normal people, new, it means perfect, and means beautiful, and means desirable.
Mm-hmm.
And used means imperfect, right. Not desirable, and something ugly. So this is the key. We need to change this, and the designer needs to contribute in this change of perception.
Okay.
Using also the materials. And the design process as well. Yeah.
Okay. This the we are talking is related somehow with the consumption, and so this enormous obsolescence of current products, including also the technological ones, is a reflection on a fast society, not only in terms of consumption but also in terms of living. In this framework, what innovative responses do you believe can be equated and or are already being proposed by research in materials or materials research?
Mm-hmm. But I think that with a very small answer I can give, that is we need to think in a fast materials.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, material that can be fast disappearing, so that can be biodegradable and something that can be consistent with the fast consistent with our very fast way to consume them, or we can also think in materials that can be developed using the materials that can be fast consumed, so recycling raw materials and create raw material from this kind of recycling process. And also in this case we have a lot of research, for example one focus on the recycling of fiberglass from the boats. That is a very big problem in terms of sustainability and things. And that's all.
Okay, very good. In terms of the material libraries, what you call materioteca,
mm-hmm.
These libraries offer us the possibilities to search materials based on their physical or chemical properties, okay? And these properties are easily quantifiable or measurable and are long-term parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see material libraries being also able to offer us other kind of information, such as, for example, related to sensorial, emotional or cultural aspects on materials?
Mm-hmm. I designed one material library in the university, so in an academical context, not in a business one, almost 20 years ago. And the reason why we started to develop this material library was our driver was to give to the design student and to the design world a very large amount of sensorial information. So the reason that got born the material library was to take in one place, put in one place a lot of samples that can give the possibility to the designer to get in contact with materials, and contact with the sample means to have the possibility to explore these samples through your material, your sensorial abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, using these samples, you can also improve as the people is able to do with the wine.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also take a course in material exploration from a sensorial point of view, because you can find a very little differences. So you can became able to find little differences where common people maybe can only see a small sample, brown samples with a small draws in a surface, for example. As a designer, you need to be able to explore and to describe from a sensorial point of view, of course, in a richer way, these samples. And in Politecnico, in the last years, we organize also sensorial course to be able to explore. And the material library were a perfect place
to do that.
And in this moment, I think that material library are looking for a new identity. And in my idea is one possible future for a material library is to connect more with the Fab Lab. Here in Politecnico, where the material library was, instead of the material library, they built the Fab Lab, and they move away the material library. And for me, this was a very big mistake, because my idea was useful to keep the samples and to build, surrounded by the samples, the Fab Lab. Because, of course, in a material library you can have a lot of industrial material that maybe are not useful for a maker culture, but you can use these samples as an inspiration, and the inspiration mostly come from the sensorial information that you can find in a sample, and also in all the world that are surrounding us. To my student, I'm used to say them that they are not necessity to pay for a very expensive fees to the material library, to the private material library, because they are constantly surrounded by materials, by a different sensorial qualities that can experience directly from the world. I used to say them, you are sitting in a chair, you have a table in front of you, you have a pen in your hands, not a pen, they have the laptop in front now, but so you can constantly, you live in a material library, you need to put the right glass to look at these
materials. So this is related somehow with this challenge that is mapping all the materials that exist, or to foresee what the new ones can be developed in the future. This tremendous amount of materials that exist now. Mm-hmm. Some authors talk about 100,000 materials, make the communication of each material identity very, very hard. Not only because of the quantity, but also because of the complexity of the information that we need to provide. Can you give us some examples of materials that are being well taught and communicated in terms of identity?
I have two examples that came on my mind. The first one, I don't know if you know this material, that is a material that appeared in the end of the 90s or 2000, that in Italy we call the Technogel. That with a gel, a jelly consistency, with a lot of color. And in that case, I remember that at that time was an incredible advertising effort to promote this new identity of these materials, and was one of the first materials that was communicated through their sensorial qualities, through the design magazine, or it was not a website, but a lot of brochures, and the company sent a lot of samples. There was two or three companies, and one was in France and another one in Italy, and they designed very good sample palettes, and it was a very good and at that time these things affected a lot the design context, and I remember not Zanotta, but another important Italian furniture company used a lot this material. And so, in this case, the communication was succeed a lot in affecting the design context. Good. And but my favorite example in this thing, in this area, is Abbott Laminati. That is a company that since the 80s started on design the material. Mm-hmm. Laminate, as Gioponti said, is not a natural material. It's a material invented by human for the human needs. And the company was so good in had the idea to call the big designer as Sotsas. Mm-hmm. As supervisor of this project, and they invented the identity of the material. They invented the texture, because it's a surface material, no? So they invented the texture, the color, they invented the material to put in the last layer, the surface. For example, the Malpensa airport is all covered by this Abbott Laminati that is called cannot remember the name of this, but it's green with a small grain of coffee. Mm-hmm. You can check it and it's fantastic, and they design also the sample palette, and was and still is a great inspiration. And as a Pantone collection, the designer can use the Abbott Laminati palette to refer to the color. It was an incredible tool. It was a box full of sample, and was incredible. Oh. And it was, for me, the first example, and I tell to my student to look at these materials, because it was a design material, and they designed the identity. And if you want to do DIY materials, and you need to take this process and design the identity of your material, you can be inspired by this one.
Okay, good examples. This is the idea of having this library, this material library, might create some restrictions on the access to the information, because if we look into the library as a storage that exists physically, it might become harder or difficult for the designers or other people interested on coming to the library and have access to the materials. But because we are living in this hyper-connected world, do you think we could find better ways to disclose this material information to the community? Mm. Or we still need to have this physical samples to get information from the materials?
In my opinion, to get a very real and complete experience, you have to get in contact with the materials. Of course, as you said, we are living in a hyper-connected world. We can maybe build another net, sharing all the information that can be shareable through the internet. And try to build an international material library where in some key points you can have the physical collection where you can refer. And then we can maybe we can have this information shareable in an internet level. But through the contact with the sample, you can be inspired a lot.
A lot.
So the experience is to get this. I remember one material libraries that was Materio in France. They at one point decided to have the video about the interaction with the samples. So to put online, for example, a person interact with the sample to give to the user in front of the PC the idea about the interaction of the sample. But I think it's not enough.
Not enough, okay. No. Still keeping in mind this idea of a hyper-connected world, that somehow stimulates me to think about the smart materials, because nowadays we can expect materials to have technology embedded. So these computers are ubiquitous; they are embedded on materials. We are expecting materials to have sensors and to be smart and to react to our interaction. Which role do you think smart materials play in these new worlds of interactions, digital interactions?
For sure, we are living in a very interactive, connected, and smart world. And maybe finally, smart materials can be able to find their great application, because smart materials exist since 15, 20 years and never found a very good application. With these materials in our world, always develop consistently with human needs. In this moment and for the future, I think we will need material that are able to respond to stimuli and things. And maybe finally is the time for material, for smart material. Smart materials and also hybrid materials that can be composed by some smart materials, but traditional materials, because these smart materials are able to give us new sensorial qualities and new material experience. Mm. But we still need also traditional material, let me say, as a filter, as a interpreter of these new qualities that are very strong for our for the normal people.
Okay.
Because as a researcher, we are always in a privileged position that we can be aware maybe a little bit before of normal people, and we have the responsibility to communicate these things.
Yeah, true. But smart or dumb materials, I don't care. Still, the sensorial aspects are or will continue to be relevant, fundamental in this interaction with materials. How do you think we can investigate sensoriality in this area, in the research on materials?
So I think that the most important things, as I said before, is to learn how to interact with the material sample and with materials in general. 10 years ago, let me say, we only had the possibility to touch the samples of industrial material. Today, we are able and we are hallowed, so we hallowed ourselves to tinkering with materials, and our sensorial abilities are challenged also about this part of the process. Because so one thing is to touch and to see and to interact with a already done sample, and another thing is to build the samples. But the thing is constantly train your ability to explore from a sensorial point of view. The priority in every material project or design project are constantly changing, because if you are designing something that is more related to the mouth, because you are designing a cutlery, we cannot say that the seeing is more important than the touch, or so there is not hierarchy in from a design point of view about the sensory information. All the sensory information are equally important. It depends on the project requirement. So a designer needs to be trained in all your sensorial abilities, and maybe more.
Okay. That is very interesting that you are talking about that, because I was going to ask you, as a professor, which knowledge do you think designers need to know in order to do this kind of research on sensoriality?
Also in this topic there is a transdisciplinary approach. So you need to study about physiological competencies, engineering competencies, because maybe you need to take the measure of the texture. That, so as a designer, as Amanzini taught me 25 years ago, or maybe more, as a designer you need to be able to speak a lot of different languages.
Yeah, that's true. We are approaching the end of this interview, and so I just have one more and last question for you that is related with the fundings. We know that research is very expensive, and I guess that do research in materials can be even more expensive than in the other areas. So how do you manage to get funds to support your research?
So in my personal experience, I succeed to have some internal funds in here in the department, with a project focus on interactive, connected, and smart materials, because it's a topic very up to date, and the European community. So the through the European call is possible to find some funds for the research, because always materials are a topic that is interested for the European community, and we got some funds through the Erasmus Plus call, or Marie Curie one. And
companies, also, no private.
This is something funding. That is brand new for us, because a lot of companies, not a lot in our case. Okay. So in our case, we have two cases, but we are aware that a lot of companies they want to think about their own materials, above all the companies that are involved in a material production, because they want to change the origin of the material that they are using. Also because for the law in 10 years they have to change plastic, not single-use plastics and things, so they are start thinking that they have to change something. And in our specific case, in the last 6 months, we have been contacted by two important companies that they want to start this process toward more circular material, let me say.
Okay, so very interesting. Okay, so Valentina, thank you so much for this inspirational conversation. It was a pleasure, and I think this is a very important topic for those interested in design, and particularly in research on materials. And so I hope we can get more students and companies and experts to collaborate with us.
Materials are the raw materials of design, fine. So we need to study them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to you.
If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast on the main platform. For more information about the Unreleased podcast, go to unreleased.unitcom-yad.pt. There you can find all the episodes and more information about our guests. We would like to special thank the Politecnico di Milano for the fantastic opportunity and the kind reception at all times. Unreleased podcast is the result of the work of the students of Design Cultures and Practices course from the PhD in Design program of IAD Università Europea. It's produced and edited by Unitcom.